If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And now, stay tuned for the program that has rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story. Curiosity killed a cat.
Two people sit on an old wharf piled high with lobster traps, wooden buoys, and fishnets. But the dark, half-puzzled eyes of the young man are not on those things, nor on the distant masts of the fishing smacks and draggers scuttling into the harbor. No, John Hawley sees only the sun-bleached prettiness of the woman opposite him and the sturdy lines of the trawler approaching the wharf. Both the woman and the boat belong to Captain Daniel Bailey. Yes, John. That's what you're thinking about, isn't it? Ever since you came home from the merchant marine to find your childhood sweetheart married to a miserly old man, you've thought how easy it should be to get Captain Bailey's trawler, his gear, his house, his money, and his wife. And taking a job with the captain was only your first step. Favoring your bandaged finger, you pick up a brush and paint a red stripe around the lobster buoy. The mark that tells the world it's not wise to tamper with anything that belongs to Captain Daniel Bailey. Carrie glances nervously toward the trawler and back.
Guess it'd look kind of funny me going back to house now, with the Nautilus just landing.
Yeah, Daniel sees you, Carrie. So does old Matt Tuttle. He just waved.
Daniel took Matt along to haul traps in your place. Can't figure why they came back so early.
Weather, probably. Oh, I counted on crushing my finger to give us the whole day together, Carrie.
You think Dan'll guess you did it on purpose?
So I could stay ashore with his wife? Are you crazy?
Not crazy. Body has to live with my husband and know how suspicious and mean he can be.
I don't know. I remember when we were kids, we used to holler at him in the streets, call him a miser. And later I joined the Merchant Marine, and while I'm gone, you haven't married the old coot.
We're not kids any longer, John.
I know, but why did you do it, Carrie?
I never had a house of my own. I never had anything. Money or clothes.
Oh, that's a good one. He hooked you and never even lost his bait. Captain Dan'll never spent a dime on you.
No, he hasn't.
Yet everybody knows he's been salting it away for years. Carrie, don't you know where?
No, but I told you, he doesn't believe in banks.
We knew where to lay our hands on that dough.
Well?
I've been going out to haul lobster pots with him ever since he sprained his back, haven't I? Accidents happen pretty easy at sea.
Dan'll's a violent man, John. He won't sit by.
Listen, Carrie, the day we find out where his money is, you can get out your Sunday, go to meet and dress. You always did look pretty in black.
Give your bar line to me, Matt.
Here she comes, John.
Okay. These are off now.
Hi there, Captain Dan. Good haul today?
Fair. No thanks to you, John. Get that stern line out, Matt, and hop to it.
Nice of you to come down to meet me, Carrie.
I was mending nets while John painted the buoy.
Kinda figured you would. Suppose you get back to the house now and see to supper. We got company. Figure I owe it to Matt for helping me out.
That's one way of getting out of paying him.
Matt's a friend of mine. Something you wouldn't understand, John. Think maybe we should invite John to supper, too, Carrie?
Whatever you say, Dan'l.
Seems like he needs somebody to help him nurse that crushed finger back to health. Right now, if you don't mind, I got to borrow John to help us sort lobsters. Oh, I'll bring him home to supper. Well, you look right nice, Carrie. Quite a spell since you fixed yourself up like this.
Quite a spell since we had company. Where do you think you're off to now?
Want to go up to the attic for a minute.
The supper's ready, Dan. Matt and John are all ready to sit down. It seems to me every time I call you for supper, you decide to go to the attic.
Yeah, Daniel likes to look at that old sea chest he's got up there. Leastwise, what's in it. Maybe put a little more in it, eh, Daniel?
Seems like Matt's let the cat out of the bag about your private bank, Captain Dan.
All right, suppose I have got some money tucked away. Hard work's just as important as ever, John. And that's what you're afraid of.
Yeah, like all young people today, want to start at the top.
Don't see where scrimping and slaving have got you, Matt. Up at 4:30 in bed at 8 all your life. I'd like to have some fun before I die.
You never used to complain about your luck, Carrie. Anything special on your mind?
I get fed up sometimes. Well, I'll put the things on. You men sit down at the table.
Well, there's the horn starting. Guess I sniffed out the weather all right, eh, Matt?
Yeah, Daniel. Sure glad we aren't aboard the Nautilus now.
Why not? She's got a good compass. You know these waters as well as the rest of us, Matt.
Yeah, maybe so, John, but too many men have piled up on the inner reef just the same.
Not if you know where you're going and how to get there.
Never heard you sound so almighty sure of yourself, John.
Well, it's a question of knowing all there is to know about a subject, Captain Dan'l. Navigation or anything else. Like maybe there's just one thing holding you up, and you find the answer to what you didn't know, and you're all set.
I don't know as I exactly get the drift of all that, John. You understand him, Carrie?
I think so, Dan'l.
Dan'l's mind is on putting all that folding money in his sea chest.
No, I'm thinking more of the fog closing in, Matt.
I can't very well forget it with that foghorn sounding like it was calling a body to his doom. Know what the foghorn always makes me think of?
Sure, Matt. Makes you think of death.
Yes, sir. Yeah, does it that. How'd you know, John?
Well, I guess you might say it makes me think of the same thing.
At this point in the Whistler, I usually bring you a message about Signal products. But tonight, at this season of goodwill toward men, I'd like to reserve these valuable seconds for a little later in the program, in order to have time to bring you a message about one of your neighbors, a message which I hope will serve to further strengthen the bond of understanding and friendship between you and him.
Well, John, it was quite a shock coming home from several years in the Merchant Marine to find your childhood sweetheart married to Captain Daniel Bailey, wasn't it? But you're certain Carrie still loves you, aren't you? And you tell yourself that things will soon be much different, especially now that you've made sure where the old miser keeps all his money, in an old iron sea chest in the attic. It's a cold and black Monday morning, 2 hours before dawn, as you walk into the cheerful beam of light coming from the Bailey kitchen window. Carrie's there getting her husband's breakfast. And you know she's thinking the same thing you are. How easy it is for accidents to happen at sea, especially when there's a reason and a will to help them along. Then, as you open the back door, you stumble over the sea chest.
Oh, I hope you didn't hurt your toe on that chest, John. Be too bad if it kept you on land, too, like that crushed finger did.
It's your fault for leaving it there, Dan. I can't see why you brought it down in the first place.
I figure on stowing it aboard the boat. Get your mug up, John. Let's cast off.
You know, Captain, it's your wife's coffee, not your 25 bucks a week that gets me up at this unholy hour to go out and haul traps with you.
You know, I guess there was something about Carrie that interested you. Yeah. Her coffee, huh? Consider that a flattering remark, Carrie?
I'm considering the work I got ahead of me, Dan'l. Sooner you two get yourselves and that chest out of my kitchen, the happier I'll be.
Well, that chest looks good and solid, Captain Dan'l.
Yeah, they made things to last in my father's day. I always thought a lot of that chest.
Do you really think it'll be safe on the boat, Dan'l?
Well, an old sea chest? Why not, Carrie? I got a feeling it's better stowed away in a locker where I can keep my eye on it.
Good sturdy lock there. Fine workmanship.
There, put that chest down.
It was only hefting it, Dan'l.
Well, I was figuring on carrying it to the boat for you, Captain.
Well, you keep your hands off things that don't belong to you. Now you swig down that coffee while I get a couple of lobster traps out of the shed, if you're so anxious to carry something.
All right, Captain. You don't need to get sore.
You know, there's an old saying, John. Maybe you heard it. Curiosity killed a cat. Makes a lot of sense.
Know where he keeps the keys of that chest, Carrie?
On his key ring with the others. Here's Jack.
Hauling gets to be hot work. If he'd take his coat off before he went out in the door, he might have a chance.
Maybe he took the money out, hid it somewhere else.
Not from the way he's acting.
He suspects it's John. That's why he's moving the chest to the boat. Listen, the cabin's always locked except when he's on board. He keeps that key on his ring, too.
Don't you worry. When I'm ready, Carrie, Captain Dan'l won't have things his way at all.
You wonder about Captain Dan'l as he shoulders the chest and walks behind you down to the wharf where you board the Nautilus. It's interesting to see that he can't wait to get out of the harbor before locking the chest in the big locker on the starboard side, isn't it, John? Of course, it's probably coincidence that he suggests you both haul traps from the same dory when you reach the outer shoal, and that he never once takes his jacket off, even when pulling up the heavy crates. It makes you wonder if he knows you plan to kill him. But you've got to wait for the right moment, don't you? And 2 days later, you think that time has come when Dan'l's about to climb up over the side of the trawler from the dory riding below. As you stand over him on the deck...
Careful of your back, Captain. Let me give you a hand up.
No, not yet. Let me get the dory a mite closer, John. Wouldn't want to fall between her and the Nautilus.
Well, come on, get a hold of my hand. I'll hang on to you.
Say, would you look who's coming into view? Ahoy there, Matt!
What's Matt's motorboat doing out here beyond the reef? I thought he stuck to shallower water.
He changed his lobster traps day before yesterday.
That's funny. I wonder why.
Because I suggested it, John. Now you can give me a hand up.
That evening, when you explain to Carrie that you failed, there's something almost like contempt in her eyes, isn't there, John? So you make up your mind tomorrow will be the day, no matter what. And by noontime, it looks as though Matt Tuttle was a blessing in disguise at that. You finished your haul when Captain Dan'l decides to give Matt a hand with his. You watch the captain set out alone in the dory. Then you go quickly below to the cabin, where you saw him throw his jacket on the bunk. When he comes back, you'll have the sea chest open and the money in your pocket. And there'll be no more hide and seek, no more waiting for the right setup. You'll kill him in the cabin, out of sight of Matthew's prying eyes. Later, there'll be ways of getting rid of the body. Eagerly, you pick up his jacket, and as your hand goes into the side pocket...
I'll take my jacket, if you don't mind.
Captain Dan'l, I noticed you forgot your jacket,
you
sir.
You think so? Toss it here. Then take the Nautilus and head back to port. I'll be going back with Matt. He's expecting me, so I wouldn't try anything if I was you.
Why, of course not, Captain.
By the way, I won't be needing you anymore, John. I worked out a deal with Matt. He's going to help me.
Oh? You intend to pay me for a full week?
Not if you don't work it. Tomorrow's Friday. You want to make it your last day?
You think of any reason why I shouldn't?
Maybe. Now I got my keys, John. I'll be going. Just you better remember what I said about curiosity killing a cat.
You've failed again, haven't you, John? You tell yourself Captain Dan'l wouldn't be alive now if he hadn't caught you by surprise. If it hadn't been that Matt was expecting him. The next morning, you skip your mug of strong black coffee in Carrie's kitchen and go directly to the trawler to wait for Captain Dan'l. This is your last chance, and you're afraid to let Carrie see the little fears and doubts crawling in your desperate mind. When the captain arrives, his mood is as cold and heavy and silent as the fog which hangs over land and sea. But just as you're about to cast off...
Dan'l!
Carrie, what do you want?
I've decided to go out with you today, Dan'l. I'm coming aboard.
Well, I'm counting on stormy weather when the fog lifts, Carrie. But if you want, you're free to come aboard.
Breeze has sprung up, Dan'l.
Barometer's fallen, too. Well, it's time to make our haul anyway. We may catch it on the way back.
Want me to take the wheel, Captain?
No. The less you have to do with this boat, the better.
Look, Captain, I know it looked bad yesterday, but when I picked up your jacket, it was natural.
Oh, I forgot all about that. I got other things on my mind. I reckon we all have.
You mean the storm, Dan'l? There'll be danger, will there, coming back?
You know, you sound a mite worried, Carrie. Mind if I ask why?
No reason at all, Dan'l.
Well, as long as I'm at the wheel, you... Well, maybe she'd feel safer, Johnny, if you was to explain that you can navigate these waters as good as me.
Well, sure I can, Captain, but
funny thing, you know, I don't remember your worrying about my getting home safe before, Carrie. I suppose it's different when you're along yourself. Guess that's it, eh?
Of course. I'm going on deck for a breath of air. As long as Dan'l insists on staying at the wheel, John, I don't see why you have to stay in the cabin. Why wait till we reach the lobster grounds, John? Why not now?
These are fishing waters, Carrie. Don't you see those other boats off there? You think they're blind?
Still trying to put it off, aren't you?
Another half hour, we'll be there, Carrie.
If the weather turns bad, can we get back without him?
I've done it 100 times. I know these waters like the palm of my hand. Look, Carrie. When we're almost there, I'll slip up behind him while he's still got his attention on the wheel.
I'll be watching to see you do. This time. No mistakes. It's got to be over before Matt Tuttle's boat gets there.
For a half hour, there's no sound but the steady chugging of the engine. And then suddenly it stops. Dead ahead is the first of Captain Daniel's lobster buoys. Carrie hands you the piece of lead pipe you dropped. There's no turning back now, is there, John? Holding the weapon in back of you, you silently open the cabin door and step inside. Captain Dan'l isn't there. He's tied the wheel to a set course, and before you can turn...
You can drop that lead pipe, John. I wouldn't want to shoot a man in the back. Now, let you and me step out on deck with Carrie.
Look, Captain, I don't know what you're thinking, but...
Thinking? For a whole week, I've been trying to keep myself from being killed and at the same time give you a chance to tip your hand. It would have been one or the other if you weren't so yellow.
That's how you let me come along today, Dan'l.
I wondered if you wouldn't take a hand sooner or later, Carrie. You came along to give this young feller some nerve.
What are you going to do?
Might kill you, John. Don't like that, eh? Well, I've always been a law-abiding man. I figure the sheriff will know what to do about attempted murder.
And what about me, Dan'l?
You love this weak-kneed squirt, Carrie?
Yes, Dan'l, I always have.
Then, by thunder, you can stand right alongside him in court. Huh, there's Matt's boat coming in. We'll take him aboard.
What does Matt Tuttle know about this, Dan'l?
Nothing, up till now. I don't wash my dirty linen in public.
Not much you don't, you tight-fisted penny-pinching old...
Old miser, huh? Maybe, John. But it appears to me your craving to get your hands on money beats mine all hollow.
What do you mean?
All you know. The way both of you perked up when Matt mentioned my old sea chest that night. Well, it was a sight to see. Right then's when I knew. Right then's when I decided to move it here on board.
A man as mean and suspicious as you would be hard to fool.
My money was the bait I hooked you two on. That sea chest was like a bait bag bulging with herring. And it pulled you into my trap like a couple of greedy lobsters.
So all the time you were...
Giving you a rope to hang yourself. And now let's have no more talk. We'll anchor and wait for Matt. You get up forward, John. Be ready to drop that anchor over the side. And I'll come along. Just in hopes you'll give me calls to shoot you the way I'd like.
And so, John, with Captain Dan'l's revolver pointed squarely at your back, you move carefully before him up onto the slippery bow. He keeps his distance. He's not giving you a chance to turn on him, is he, John? Balancing yourself, you squat over the heavy anchor and move the line toward the chop. Then you notice something. As old Daniel stops walking, watches for the right spot to drop anchor, he steps into a loop of the anchor rope. This gives you an opportunity you hadn't expected. With one move, you shove the anchor over. And the rope tightens around Daniel's leg, pulling him overboard and into the sea.
Now there, Carey. John and me searched as long as we could. Daniel's gone. There's nothing more we can do.
Thank you, Matt. I just...
Don't try to say nothing now. And you, John, you better get out of those wet clothes. It was a mighty fine thing you did, going right over the side of the airstream like that.
I couldn't reach him, Matt. I think he got untangled from the anchor line all right, but he must have been in bad shape. Probably hit his head as he went over.
Eh, try not to think of it anymore. Lucky I happened along when I did, though.
Oh, you were a big help, Matt.
Ain't just what I mean, Carrie. There was something preying on Daniel's mind. Some said he was worried about you two.
Well, now look here, Matt.
I wasn't one of them, John. Jumping catfish, I've known your kid since you was... knee-high to a grasshopper. But Daniel, rest his soul, he had one of them suspicious minds.
I don't think you should talk like that.
But there might have been, well, talk about his death, Carrie. Lucky my boat was close enough so as I can swear nobody was near him when he fell over. You got me to prove to folks it was an accident. Well, I gotta get back to my motorboat. She don't ride a storm like this boat, eh, John? Hey, here she comes. I'll close your cabin door tight.
By the time Matt gets through talking to folks, you'll be a hero, John.
What a break. Soon as he gets out of the way, we'll start back. Eh? And then we'll get that sea chest out of the locker and have a look at it. He called it a bait bag. Bulging with herring, Carrie.
To tempt a couple of greedy lobsters, John.
Only this time, baby. You and me are the ones that got away.
Now, friends, for that message I mentioned earlier. That message about one of your neighbors. This neighbor is someone who often doesn't get a chance to spend as much time as he'd like to getting acquainted with you, because he feels you'd rather have him concentrate on serving you promptly and efficiently, checking your tires, your radiator, your oil, your battery. He's your signal dealer, of course. But who is he, really? Well, as you know, signal dealers are independent dealers. That means each signal dealer has invested his own money in his own business. So naturally, being a small businessman, he knows what's made America great. He's a strong believer in America, the kind of citizen you can be proud to do business with. Secondly, before deciding to go into business for himself, He, like most signal dealers, probably had long experience servicing automobiles. Experience which can be valuable in making your car run better and last longer. Moreover, each signal dealer realizes that his income and success depend upon pleasing you so well, you'll want to deal with him regularly. That's why your signal dealer tries to give such thorough, such conscientious service. If all this adds up to the kind of serviceman you'd like to have looking after your car, then here's a suggestion. Sometime soon, before Christmas, stop at the signal dealer's nearest you and exchange some little friendly words, such as how you enjoy this radio program, or the chuckle you get out of the cartoons on signal billboards, or even the weather. You'll be making that dealer's Christmas a much, much merrier one. And you'll be getting even better acquainted with a good fellow American who is in business there to serve you.
It was easier than you had dared hope, wasn't it, John? Captain Daniel's foot caught in the anchor line that dragged him overboard to his death. And your diving in after him took care of the rest, didn't it? And you're perfectly safe because Matt Tuttle saw the accident. We'll even swear you risked your life to rescue Captain Daniel. You head the Nautilus back toward port. Leave Carrie at the wheel. Get the captain's sea chest and rejoin Carrie. The storm is increasing in fury, so you place the chest on the chart stand by the compass and take the wheel. But soon your curiosity overcomes you. You turn the wheel over to Carrie again and start to open the chest.
Just a few twists of the blade and... Carrie?
What, John?
That bell buoy. It sounds to port. You'll be to starboard.
Keeping the compass just like it said.
I see. Oh, well, when rain cuts your visibility, you get to imagining all sorts of things about
the rain. Get on with the chest, why don't you?
Oh, a lot, rope. The lid's kind of stiff, but I'm getting it. Carrie, give me that wheel.
What are you doing, John? You turned us off our course.
You mean I'm trying to?
What are you talking about?
We're too close to that reef. The wind and current are against us. We're being pushed under the rocks. Any second,
Carrie. You said our course was north.
It was. When I put that iron chest on the chart stand, it affected our compass. We're headed right onto the inner reef. If I hadn't been so excited about the money, I'd have remembered that chest was made of iron.
Look, the chest is empty.
Empty?
Yes, except for the old chart to it for yourself.
Oh, that's what that scheming Captain Daniel was up to. He knew we were dying of curiosity about that old sea chest. And he knew it was empty.
Where is his money, John?
I don't know. Now we'll never know.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this time. Signal Oil Company has asked me to remind you, during this busy pre-holiday season, it's especially important to drive at sensible speed, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations, so that some avoidable accident doesn't mar your Merry Christmas. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Lamont Johnson, Peggy Weber, Griff Barnett, and Charles Seal. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Jack Kelsey, music by Wilbur Hatch. It was transmitted overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember to tune in at this same time next Sunday when the Signal Oil Company will bring you another strange story by The Whistler entitled Christmas Gift, in which a nice girl pays a high price for a single mistake and then receives an unexpected Christmas gift. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. Stay tuned now for our Miss Brooks starring Eve Arden, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Thank you.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
And now, stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who is guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invite you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story, A Rose for Pamela.
The concert was progressing successfully, brilliantly, as Denise Barrett listened closely. The young artist had perfect command of the keyboard at her fingertips, and the quiet, inspired audience watching. This was because, like her famous father, the late Thomas Barrett, she loved music. It was a part of her. And she felt no more nervousness than he might have had at the height of his brilliant career as one of the world's most celebrated pianists. Pamela Barrett might have felt differently, however, if she knew what was in the heart and mind of Denise Barrett, her young and attractive stepmother. Pamela's touch might not have been so fine, so sure, if she had the knowledge of Denise's cold, calculated plan for murder. It was a plan that began some time back, wasn't it, Denise? At an even more innocent affair. An impromptu concert at a pleasant social gathering. Friends of yours and of Pamela. As usual, you watched admiringly as Pamela played for her friends. Softly. Beautifully.
Oh, Pamela, darling, it was beautiful, wonderful.
Thank you, Denise. All of you, thanks so much.
She's ready now.
Oh, you must arrange a day before, Denise.
I should say so.
Oh, you hear them, darling. It's what I've been telling you repeatedly. You mustn't let anything interfere with your music.
Nothing will, Denise. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to...
You've done a marvelous job as a guardian, Denise. Her father would have been proud. Yes, it's a shame Thomas Barrett couldn't be here.
Oh, yes, he would have loved to hear his daughter play tonight.
Yes. Yes, it's our only regret.
Oh, now, dear, I'm sorry I mentioned that.
Oh, it's all right. Just the excitement. The thrill of hearing her play so much like Thomas himself.
Yes, Denise, so much like Thomas Barrett himself, your late husband. The thought is still on your mind as you excuse yourself. Leave your guest discussing the way you've managed Pamela, brought her along, guided her career and affairs so efficiently. And on the terrace, you're congratulated again by a guest who has remained in the background. Marty Drake, attorney for the estate of your late husband, Thomas Barrett.
She was very good, Denise. Very good.
The girl does have talent, doesn't she?
Uh-huh. You think she meant that about not letting anything interfere with her career?
I hope so.
So do I. You ought to make sure, you know. A young girl in love that way.
I've managed her pretty well until now, Marty. And she has faith in you, both personally and as an attorney. She told me the other afternoon she was glad you were handling the estate.
Oh, sure. I was just thinking her father's brilliant career ended by an accident. Would be dreadful if anything had to end the daughters, too.
Please, Marty.
Sorry. Like I said, just thinking.
Marty, it would be terrible if...
You couldn't handle her? Couldn't talk her out of marrying Richard Matthews?
Oh, but I can. I must.
You can say that again, baby. Her marriage would put us both in the position of having to account for the $100,000 we've managed to remove from the estate.
$100,000? Is it that much, Marty?
We've lived well, Denise. Very well. Since Thomas fell over that cliff a year ago.
But $100,000, Marty, that's...
That's the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony. You'd better go to work on Pamela.
I will. Tomorrow.
Thought you might like a cocktail, Mrs. Barrett. Sir?
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you, Alma.
Thank you. I could use one very nicely.
Oh, Alma, would you tell Pamela there's another number I'd like her to play? Liszt's Liebenstraum.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. She told me to tell you. She's gone out. There was a phone call.
Not Richard Matthews.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Richard Matthews.
Well, and you tell me not to worry.
Marty, we're going to have trouble.
So is Pamela.
How do you mean?
We won't have much choice, Denise. If your lovely stepdaughter persists in marrying, there might be only one way to stop it. Yes, one way. And this time, you'll do the stopping. If you don't, baby, you won't be around to spend any more of Pamela's money. You'll be on the inside looking out.
Oh, no, Marty. I'll stop her.
And if you don't?
If I don't, it's like you say, another accident. Another tragic loss in the Barrett family. And the music world.
Throughout the seven Pacific Coast states, from Canada to Mexico, motorists call Signal the Go Farther gasoline. Now, naturally, we're mighty proud of Signal's good mileage, which has built that reputation. But equally important to you as a motorist is the way Signal gives you such good mileage. You see, today's Signal helps your engine run so efficiently, you save gasoline three ways. One, you save gasoline with Signal's quick starting. Two, you save gasoline with Signal's smooth, obedient pickup, free from balking and hesitation. Three, you save gasoline with Signal's lively power that gets you into high gear fast, helps you stay there with a minimum of shifting on hills or in traffic. Well, considering the number of times a day you start your car, accelerate, and shift gears, even a little gasoline saved each time soon adds up to a big saving. So there, in a nutshell, friends, is why motorists call Signal the Go Farther gasoline. Why not treat your car to Signal and go farther?
Yes, Denise. As Marty indicated, Pamela must be dealt with firmly, decisively. Her romantic inclinations toward Richard Matthews must come to an abrupt halt. Yes, because with marriage, Pamela would be in a position to explore the nefarious financial dealings in which you and Marty have engaged with the funds from the estate. Also, Pamela might have reason to suspect the grim fact that her father, Thomas Barrett, might have died by other than accidental means. You lose little time in facing the situation squarely, Denise, as the following afternoon you hurry down the long corridor toward the music room, determined to talk to her. However, as you pass the study, the maid steps into view.
Oh, ma'am.
Yes, Alma?
About Mr. Barrett's curio collection. Miss Pamela said she didn't want anything touched. I told her that
you... Oh, now, really? I don't see why she insists on keeping those awful things around. Spears, poison darts, those vials of South African poisons, snake venom, all those things.
Well, her father's, ma'am.
I can't imagine what Mr. Barrett had in mind bringing those horrible things back with him after that South African tour. I just can't. Oh, poisons. They make me shiver. Oh, well. Never mind, Alma. I'll talk to Pamela again later.
Very good, ma'am.
You play Chopin nearly as well as your father did, Pamela. You're still angry with me, aren't you? Well, I don't blame you, really. I should have told you the reasons I thought it best that you postpone your marriage to Richard for a year or two.
The main reason is that you enjoy telling me I can't do things, isn't it, Denise?
You think I'm very unfair, don't you, dear?
Aren't you?
I don't think so. Oh, Pamela, I know how hard it's been for you since your father died. It's been hard on me, too. I loved him very much. And I've just been trying to keep a promise I made to him about you. I guess I've gone at it very badly.
Promise? What was the promise?
I promised him I'd see to it that you followed in his footsteps. Became a great concert pianist.
You did?
Yes, dear, I did.
Dad asked you to?
Yes. He wanted you to make your debut at Civic Hall on your 19th birthday.
Well, that's scarcely 2 weeks away.
Yes, it is. But I made all the arrangements some time ago. And that's why I was so shocked when you said you wanted to give up your music and marry Richard. And why I was so emphatic in saying I wouldn't let you.
My career meant a lot to Dad, didn't it?
Pamela, you're awfully young to get married. Why not wait for a couple of years, and in the meantime, go ahead with everything just as your father planned?
I guess it would have made him happy.
No, of course it would.
All right, Denise. I'll try to go on with my career.
You'll always be glad, darling. You may feel bad now about postponing your marriage to Richard, but, well, after you get started on your career...
Denise, you must have misunderstood. I said I'd continue with my music, but I didn't say I changed my mind about marrying Richard.
But you can't marry him. You wouldn't have time for both.
Look,
you...
Denise. Legally, I'm old enough to be married, with or without your consent. Even if you are still guardian of my money. If I decide to marry Richard, there's nothing you can do to stop it. Remember that. Nothing.
You've failed, haven't you, Denise? That look on Pamela's face. You've seen it before on her father's face. The man you married with so much more than... love in mind. Yes, Denise, to gain control again, there's another step necessary, a more drastic one, but something more in your line. You've always managed with men easier than with women. And later that week, out at the swimming pool, you call on all the strength of your considerable feminine powers to turn the tide for you. Win Richard away from Pamela.
Morning, Richard.
Good morning, Mrs. Barrett. How's the water?
Oh, warm and wonderful. Here, give me a hand, will you?
Oh, sure. There we are.
Oh, thanks. Now to get this cap off. Oh, it was such a beautiful morning. I just couldn't resist the pool. Hand me the towel, will you?
Oh, yeah, here we are.
Oh, thank you.
Pamela around?
Oh, she had some shopping to do. That's why I asked you over. I want to talk to you alone. Sit down, Richard.
All right.
Pamela tells me you're quite a musician.
Oh, she's prejudiced.
You like Pamela very much, don't you?
I love her.
Enough to put her welfare above your happiness?
Of course.
Well, then, don't let her think about getting married until she's reached the place in the music world her father planned for her.
Why couldn't she do both?
Well, she just couldn't, that's all. Well,
hundreds of women have combined marriage with a career. Rather successfully, too.
Oh, perhaps, but not Pamela. She's different. Her life shouldn't be complicated with emotional disturbances. Her thoughts should be only of her music. And you are rather distracting, Richard.
Oh, now, really, Mrs. Barrett, you make it sound...
Denise, please.
All right. Denise?
Did it ever occur to you that the things Pamela sees in you are obvious to other women, too?
I never thought much about it, Mrs. Denise?
You know, Pamela is such a child. Naive and all. But you and I, Richard, we're the same kind. I knew it from the first time I saw you. Remember, Richard, Pamela's first concert? The afternoon you brought her the first rose?
I remember.
You seemed a little surprised when we were introduced.
Yes. I suppose I was. I didn't expect Pamela's stepmother to be so...
So what, Richard?
Well, young and so attractive.
How nice of you to say that, darling. You really think me attractive?
Yes. Very.
My, we are getting along well, aren't we, Richard? I think we should get to know more of one another. Don't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's no time like the present, is there?
Whatever you say, Denise.
He's falling into the trap, isn't he, Denise? Soon you'll be able to twist him around your little finger. Yes, you're confident that when you're through with Richard, he'll have forgotten that Pamela ever existed. You sit there at the edge of the pool with Richard for over an hour. Then when he's gone, you hurry to the telephone and call Marty.
So you charmed the boy, huh? What did he tell you?
Well, it isn't what I told him. It's what I left unsaid, Marty. That's what counts. I'm certain he thinks I'm quite mad about him, and he's very interested.
Did he say he'd keep that little rendezvous?
Oh, of course not, and I didn't ask him to. I merely mentioned that I'd be dining alone tomorrow night at that quaint little cafe overlooking the sea. And how I loved it there, the soft music, the candlelight.
Think he'll show up?
How could he turn it down? Don't worry, Marty. After tomorrow night, all our worries will be over.
Promptly at 7 the following night, you enter Schiffini's, that quaint little cafe on the beach. The head waiter steers you to a secluded table near the large window overlooking the sea. And there in the candlelight, you sip a martini, wait for Richard to show up. Suddenly, you're aware of someone standing at your elbow.
Good evening, Mrs. Barrett.
Yes?
Allow me. I am Rene Demo. May I sit down?
Well, just a moment. I am
from the Hollywood Escort Bureau.
Escort Bureau?
Yes, Mr. Richard Matthews hired me. He said Mrs. Barrett hated to dine alone.
Get out of my way, you...
Now, look, lady, how about my fee?
Collect your fee from Richard Matthews, the man who hired you. He'll pay. Yes, he'll pay all right.
Denise, are you sure Richard sent that two-bit Romeo, the guy from the Escort Bureau?
Oh, of course, Marty. And of all the dirty, shabby tricks...
Worse than the one you tried to pull on Pamela, baby. You must be losing your technique.
Well, you won't think it's so funny when I tell you that last night Pamela informed me she and Richard are planning to get married right after the concert.
What?
I said they were planning, Marty. That the wedding will never take place.
Well, how are you going to stop it? Poison her cornflakes?
Oh, don't be a fool. Poison. Yes, poison. That's it, Marty.
What are you going to do?
The Barrett Curio collection. The poisons my late husband picked up in South Africa. Some of them are fatal, almost in a matter of minutes, Marty.
I can't imagine why a great musician like Thomas Barrett went in for a gruesome hobby like collecting poison. Surprised you didn't dispose of them after his death.
Oh, Pamela wouldn't let me. Pamela wouldn't let me get rid of a thing. How very thoughtful of her. How very thoughtful. Just a scratch from any one of those poisons, and it's all over for little Pamela.
All right. But how are you going to do it?
I don't know, Marty. But I'll think of something. I'll think of something.
Yes. And it's on your mind all that night, isn't it, Denise? You've got to find a way to kill Pamela with one of the poisons from her father's collection. And somehow Richard must be blamed. Just how you're going to do that isn't clear, not yet. Not until the following afternoon, when suddenly, quite by accident, you stumble on the answer. You're sitting in the library when your maid walks into the room.
Oh, Alma.
Oh, yes, ma'am?
There are some things I want sent to the cleaners, if you'll come upstairs with me.
Right away, ma'am.
Oh, where are you going with those flowers?
Well, Miss Pamela asked me to take them out of her room and put them in here. Gardener picked them this morning. Aren't the roses beautiful?
Yes, they are. They're quite beautiful. Put them in that vase over there. I just remembered I have something important to do.
The waves are really coming in tonight, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. You know, Marty, I've been thinking.
Huh?
It's really very simple. We poison Pamela with a rose from her darling Richard.
I don't follow you, Denise.
Well, Richard always sends her a rose when she appears on the stage. It's become a superstition with him. She wouldn't appear without it.
All right, so?
I'll arrange to be at the door when the florist delivers it. Now, they always wrap the stem of the rose with a very thin wire. I'll put several sharp wires on it, Marty, and one of them right up through the rose. And all of them especially treated. One of those wires will be sure to scratch Pamela.
But suppose...
I'll pin the rose on her and arrange it so she'll be certain to scratch herself.
It'll never work. The police will be sure to find out.
Well, that'll make it all the better if they do. Richard sent her the rose, not me. He always does.
Yes, but the motive. Why would he want her out of the way?
Because he was madly in love with me. And he wanted the Barrett fortune, too. You see, he knew that with Pamela out of the way, all the money would go to me.
You know... That might work.
And with you, the attorney for the Barrett estate, to back up my story, it can't fail to work.
Sure. It'll stand up, baby.
And in another month, Marty, the Barrett fortune will be all mine.
Ours, baby.
All right. Ours. However, I think I should warn you, Marty.
Oh?
Just in case you get ideas about pushing me off a cliff and keeping all the money for yourself.
Oh, now, look, we're getting married.
Yes, I know. But I've taken the necessary precautions just the same, darling. I've sent a letter to a friend of mine, a lawyer. That letter will be opened in the event of my death.
What are you driving at?
And it's all there, in the letter, Marty. All the evidence the district attorney will need. How you embezzled money from the Barrett estate, and the complete story of Thomas's death. You see, I'd hate to have an accident happen to me, Marty. Fall off a cliff like he did.
You don't think I'd double-cross you, Denise? I'm crazy about you.
Oh, of course you are. But I just want to make certain you don't have a change of heart. You might get to think that $500,000 looks better to you than I do. You see what I mean, darling?
How much does it cost per month? That's really the only accurate way to judge cost when buying a new battery for your car. Here's what I mean. If a battery is guaranteed 30 months, that means 30 months is about the minimum life the manufacturer has built into that battery. So you divide the total cost by 30 to find the cost per month. Well, judged on that basis, one of today's lowest cost batteries is also one of today's most powerful, most trouble-free batteries, the new Signal Deluxe battery. In fact, you enjoy up to 35% more power from a Signal Deluxe battery. That means quicker starting, extra power for the many electrical gadgets on today's cars. But because it's built to last up to 2.5 times as long as ordinary batteries, a full 30 months on a service basis, a Signal Deluxe battery costs amazingly little per month. Even less when you consider the generous trade-in allowance Signal dealers are now giving for old batteries. And easy credit terms are available. So next time, get more for your battery dollars. More economy, more trouble-free service. Next time, get a Signal Deluxe battery from a Signal service station.
It was easy to complete your plans for the murder of your stepdaughter, Pamela Barrett, wasn't it, Denise? The single rose you knew Richard would send her arrived while Pamela was upstairs dressing for the concert. It took you only a few moments to turn it into a deadly weapon. Then you went to Pamela's room and carefully pinned it on her dress in such a way that she'd be certain to scratch herself and die by the poison you took from her late father's curio collection. You lie down for a while, certain that you'll soon be in full control of the Barrett fortune. You're calm and confident when Marty calls for you. Now, as you sit beside him in the concert hall, watching Pamela's performance, your eyes are fastened on the rose she's wearing. But as the recital progresses, you become more and more tense. The fear that your plan has gone wrong gradually comes over you. Something should have happened to Pamela long before this, shouldn't it, Denise? And as her brilliant performance draws to a climax, you exchange worried glances with Marty.
Oh, baby, what's gone wrong?
I don't know.
I was afraid of your idea from the start.
Oh, it'll work, Marty. It's got to. Marty, we'll go backstage to her dressing room. This way, Marty.
Excuse me.
Pardon me, please. Will you excuse me?
Oh, wonderful, wasn't it?
Yes, great performance. Your father would have been proud of her. Excuse me.
Oh, come in, ma'am. Oh, wasn't Miss Pamela wonderful tonight?
Yes, yes. Where is she?
Oh, she didn't come back to her dressing room. Ran right off the stage, left with Mr. Richard.
What?
Yes, ma'am. She gave me this note for you.
What is it, Denise?
See, my dear Denise, sorry to rush off like this, but Richard and I are driving to Reno to be married.
What?
I know you don't approve, but I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive us, love, Pamela.
Married? Miss Pamela getting married? Oh, how wonderful, man. No wonder the poor child was so excited before she left for the concert.
Oh, Maria, I don't feel well.
I feel a little pale myself.
Yes, ma'am. Miss Pamela was so nervous she could hardly pin Mr. Richard's rose on her dress. I had to do it for her.
What?
Miss Pamela was so excited
you
that I...
You pinned Mr. Richard's rose on?
Yes, ma'am.
But you couldn't have. I did it for her. I took it at the door when it came and pinned it on her dress in her room.
That's right, but I'm talking about the artificial rose Mr. Richard brought later when he came to pick up Miss Pamela.
Artificial rose?
Well, you know the allergy she's developed recently.
Her allergy for flowers? Yes, I forgot. They make her sneeze.
So that's why Mr. Richard brought her the artificial rose, so she wouldn't sneeze during the concert.
Alma, what did you do with the real rose?
Well, Miss Pamela thought it was too pretty to throw away, so she put it in your corsage.
What?
Just before she left with Mr. Richard.
My corsage? This one?
Yes, ma'am, the one you're wearing.
Denise, your arm's bleeding.
Oh, my, you must have scratched yourself.
Scratch myself? Oh, yes, yes, I have.
When did you do that?
I don't know. It must have been... Oh, Marty, I feel... Marty.
Oh, well, what's the matter, ma'am? Is something wrong?
Oh, Marty, the poison. Call the doctor. You know how quick it is.
Well, help her, Mr. Martin. She's
Denise. Denise!
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Meantime, Signal Oil Company and the friendly independent dealers who help you go farther with Signal gasoline hope you'll remember, regardless of what gasoline you use, you'll enjoy more miles of happy driving if you drive at sensible speeds, obey traffic regulations, and avoid taking chances. You may even save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Joe Gilbert, Barbara Eiler, John Stevenson, Sarah Selby, Bob Bruce, and Rye Billsbury, with piano passages played by Gene LaPeak. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen and directed by Robert Hafter, with story by Nancy Cleveland, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler was entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on the Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember to tune in at the same time next Sunday when the Signal Oil Company will bring you another strange story by The Whistler. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. Stay tuned now for Our Miss Brooks starring Eve Arden, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.